All right, welcome back, everyone. I really appreciate you being here, taking the time out to watch or listen, however you're digesting this information with us here today. Again, this is Jeff Lambert. I got a great special guest, a dear friend of mine, Rob McAndrews, on today. Thanks for being on here, Rob. I appreciate those that are listening, those that don't know Rob. Hopefully you get a little bit better opportunity to know him, learn about him, learn what he does, where he's coming from, and how faith affects his decisions in life and his business. Rob, tell us a little bit about yourself. I debate sometimes going into a deep dive and giving you a glowing intro for a minute and a half or two, like some of my favorite podcasters. But then I thought, you know what? Who knows you better than you know yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a divorced, remarried dad. I got three kids, 15-year-old daughter, a 12-year-old son. I did get remarried this summer to a wonderful woman who's also got a 15-year-old daughter and 12-year-old son. I sell cars for a living. Been doing that for 12 and a half years at the same location. So it's the only place I've sold cars, actually. I go to church every weekend. The faith is a big part of our family. So that we try to pray together every night before we go to bed and pray together before I take off for work in the morning. She's a stay-at-home mom, busy. Homeschooling some of the kids. Some of them are lucky to still go to school. So, yeah, it's kind of my life in a nutshell right now.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. You mentioned, obviously, faith is a big part of your life there. Has it always been kind of a guiding factor, guiding light, or is it something that's gotten stronger as you've gotten older?
My dad was a pastor when I was born, and I accepted Christ as a 5-year-old, and always been a kind of a strong part of my life. Sometimes it's way once in a while back and forth, but there was a lot of times in my life where it just became essential to me, especially through high school and getting through a lot of tough times in my life and everything else. But it's always been kind of a very strong part of who I am.
I would imagine it would be challenging to really buck that or go against it as having a parent who's a pastor.
Yeah. Well, he was, interesting side note for him, he was only a pastor until I was about 3 years old.
He had
some really bad experiences early on in his ministry where he lost two jobs and decided to get into the furniture business and worked for Hayworth for 23 years and then Herman Miller for another 7. But he just this year graduated with his doctorate in theology. So I got Dr. Dad now.
And, that is awesome.
Yeah. And then he has worked part-time in churches. And he's still hoping to get into the ministry and become a pastor again someplace.
Well, way to never give up. That's a story of resilience and
commitment. 70 years
even
old.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome. Maybe we'll have to talk to him at some point. And for those that don't know, if you're out of the West Michigan area, Hayworth and Herman Miller are prominent companies. You've probably heard of them, furniture companies. Hayworth, I don't know if it's office furniture, but
Hayworth are both office furniture primarily.
So if you've heard of Steelcase, these are guys that run right alongside of them, for those that don't know. So Rob, the biggest challenge that you had in your role right now, what is that and what are you doing and how are you overcoming that?
Currently the biggest challenge is continuing to get through all this COVID stuff. It's definitely put getting married in the middle of this was not easy. Blending our families together. It's just been a lot of, it's been a year. It's been definitely a year. Prior to that, my biggest challenge was getting through a divorce I was not wanting to have. So it's a lot of things that were recently in the last 5 years that have been challenging.
Okay. Have any of those, as far as business is concerned, do you have any major struggles right now in the business that you're in?
This year has been interesting. I was really worried about coming back to work after our business was closed for a few weeks, and I was actually off for 6 of the weeks in a row.
Wow. Okay.
Very nervous about coming back because it was still a little bit unknown what this virus was, how dangerous it actually was, and everything else. And so there was okay, so if I go back to work and get off unemployment, is there going to be anybody to sell cars to?
Okay.
That was a huge concern. And it actually was just the opposite. There's so many people who wanted to buy cars this summer. In our department, the first time we ever broke 100 used car sales in a month was December of 2019.
Okay.
We sold 101 cars. January, we missed it. February, usually a slower month anyway. And then March is when we closed half the month. Okay. May, we sold 107 cars. Whoa. June, we sold 111 cars. And then July, we sold 112 cars.
Wow. And
we just missed that 100 mark. We made it to 98. So, I mean, it's been a weird record-breaking year. It's almost been challenging to – it's been a lot of long, hard hours is what it's been.
Okay.
So the more challenge is getting through it and remaining – keeping your stamina through it all.
Well, I mean, those sound like some amazing records. In the midst of a global pandemic, you had three consecutive months where not only did you achieve that milestone of 100, but you got more than the prior month for three consecutive months, and then you barely missed it for month number four. So going along with those long hours, being a newly married man with a blended family, I bet that was a bit of a challenge.
Sure. She understood before we got married what my job was and that I don't get out on time often. So she was kind of a little bit familiar with that already.
Okay. Okay, good.
So I think the blessing to us is my wife, unfortunately, has had a really rough year physically with a lot of sickness and other things that have really been challenging for her. Sure. And for me to have those busy months and her to be able to be a stay-at-home mom was actually kind of an answer to prayer for us a little bit too.
Wow. Okay.
So because I'm having to try and juggle work and her health and trying to be a mom to not just two kids anymore, but you know, but essentially four. My oldest doesn't live with us, but yeah, four kids.
Okay.
So that was a big change for her too this year. So me being busier, even though it was a little bit longer hours, was actually helpful because we haven't had to worry about how to feed an army of people. So
True. And I'm guessing at this point with all that being said, with her physical issues, the health concerns and that too, along with the longer hours, longer business and everything, although that ultimately leads to financial successes, there's probably some opportunities to lean harder, to really become stronger in your faith. And,
sure.
And collectively that she is a strong woman of faith as well. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Again, one of the things I was always missing in my previous marriage was a really strong spiritual aspect to the marriage. Not that my ex-wife isn't a Christian, she definitely is. We would go to church every week together, but beyond going to church together, it was not common for us to pray together, and it was even less common for us to get into the Word together. So that is one thing that this new marriage, and my current wife, her previous marriage, it was even less so. Or her husband had a very, very weak faith. I would say even like a faith out of convenience more than anything else. She never had that spiritual aspect in her previous marriage either. So that was something that was very important to both of us.
Okay.
And we call each other out if one of us skips out on praying with each other or skips out on our devotion, stuff like that. So it's something that's really cool about this new marriage. And that has been very strengthening for me this year on a spiritual level. I mean, I'm actually getting challenged by my spouse to make sure I'm reading my Bible and doing my devotions and praying on a regular basis.
How awesome is that? I mean, that's awesome. So obviously that's a huge part of your personal life too. How is your faith, the I'm going to use the word intensity of your faith, affected, determined, you know, helped you make decisions in your business?
So that's interesting. I originally didn't want this job. I didn't apply for this job. I was working at a furniture sales company, selling furniture. And the owner of the dealership I worked for called me up, and I got paid for a phone call. And he said, "Hey, I hear you're a pretty good salesman. I got an opening in my sales force. I'd really be interested in you coming in and us talking about you working here." And I simply said, "You know what, Bob? Not interested. No, thank you." And hung up on him. And I'm not kidding.
Oh, man.
Persistent. The next day he called me again. And I said, "I'm really sorry for hanging up on you yesterday, but the idea of being a car salesman just doesn't sit well with me. I don't like the stigmas attached to that. And sure. I just not sure I want to do that." And he said, "Well, I'd really like you to consider it. If you change your mind, give me a call back." It happened to be that night I was out with a couple of friends, and one of those friends had referred me to this dealership and to Bob. And he said, you're selling furniture right now. You're working really crazy hours. And I know you're not making a ton of money doing what you're doing. I think you can make more money, work less hours, and have more fun selling cars than sofas." I'm like, "Yeah, you got a point. I guess I should go and talk to him." So I went and talked to Bob, and he showed me some commission sheets that were very impressive. But I said, "There's still the stigma of being a car salesman. I just don't think that I could do that and sleep well at night, because it just seems like such a greasy position. Like, you got to sit there and manipulate people and all this other stuff." And Bob said something to me that changed my mind. He said, "Everybody who walks through that door, I want them to be considered family members. I want them to be like your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, your uncle, your aunt." And I said, "If anybody here is not treating the people who walk through my doors as a family member, I don't want them working for me."
Wow.
And I said, "I can get on board with that." Yep. And I got the job. And so I've never had to do things that were against my convictions to sell cars there.
Okay.
I've never had to felt the need to manipulate somebody or make somebody do something that was not advised. In fact, I have told people, "It's not a good idea for you to do this. It's going to put you in a position that is not good for you. I don't think you should do this right now. I think you should take care of this and this, and then if you're still wanting to buy a car after that, come back and see me."
Okay.
I've had my boss come in. We have what's called a TO. If you're not selling a car, a manager likes to get involved at some point in time. I've heard my boss say the same thing. "I can't, in good conscience, sell you this car because I don't think it'll put you in a position where you will be successful. So I'd rather you wait." So they follow through with those same levels of morality. So
that's awesome.
And that's important to me. I wouldn't have lasted 12 and a half years if it went against what my faith.
It sounds like you needed a little bit more information, a little bit more understanding about it. Not only, I mean, the industry, we all have that preconceived idea of like the slimy used car salesman with the slick back hair, the little mustache and the polyester suit. Other industries too, like a vacuum cleaner, door-to-door salesman, that kind of thing too. You just didn't have all the information that you needed on that. And you were fully ready, and you actually did turn down the opportunity because of what you thought. Have there been other positions that have come to you, people that have sought you out, recruited you, or tried to recruit you, and you said, "Because of this, I'm going to say no," kind of a thing?
I've not really had that. There was one other job that I left because I felt like I was in a management position for a transportation company.
Okay.
And the owner was making decisions that were at least gray area, if not flat out illegal. And being the transportation manager, a lot of that responsibility could have fallen on my shoulders since I was telling my workers what they had to do.
Sure.
That was a situation where I was very uncomfortable, and I decided to quit that job and go work someplace else because of what he wanted me to do.
Good for you. So it sounds like Bob is obviously a great dude. Sounds like it here, and he might be one of the people in this here, but what are like three people, possibly he's one of them, that have had a major, major influence on you?
Yeah, you know, the biggest influence on my life is definitely my dad.
Okay.
My dad is just been my rock, you know,
okay.
Especially through this divorce. If there was a time I could say I got more close to my dad than any other time in my life, it has been, my dad was, he carried me through this divorce.
Okay.
I went to him for a lot of advice. I didn't always follow all of it, but it's kind of a problem with unsolicited advice, I think. But
yeah, we've been through that ourselves when we're talking. I'm horrible with giving it, and you're bad receiving it. So I know that.
Yeah. Yep. So, but even still, he was always willing to me, talk to me. Didn't matter if it was 11 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning. He'd go out to breakfast with me. He'd have me come over and drink a beer at 11 o'clock at night. But he really was there for me and supported me through a lot of things. Friend who my whole life I've always kind of looked up to and been, we met in seventh grade. And he influenced me in a lot of things. He got me into doing a lot of things I love to do now, including backpacking and camping and hunting and stuff like that. Got me into having fun learning how to shoot guns and be safe with guns and stuff like that. Unfortunately, as of right now, we aren't friends anymore, but I can look back through my life and see all the times that he had been very influential and had been a good, caring, loving friend who always had my back. So.
Okay. Well, it sounds like if you continue to do these activities that there's no ill past where you think, oh man, this makes me sad to do this because of the memory of this kind of thing,
which is often common.
That's often common that those of us who had been married and are not married anymore, or even remarried, I have that with, you know, some things that remind me of my ex, but I'm glad that you're able to move past that with the friendship. You told me one of those things, if I'm not mistaken, we had a conversation a few weeks ago, winter camping, where you basically sleep outside in the middle of winter in a hammock.
Well,
no cover because you're crazy. No, I'm kidding.
At first it was intense, but we decided one year to try sleeping in hammocks instead of tents. Found A, it was way more comfortable. B, it was a lot easier to control the temperature that you were sleeping in. So it actually felt safer and we got more sleep that way. So So sleeping in hammocks, believe it or not, was a better move than sleeping in a tent.
So how do you mean control the temperature?
Well, so we didn't obviously just go out there with like basic camping equipment and say, oh yeah, we're gonna go stay in the middle of snow in the middle of Michigan when it gets to be 10 degrees. Or the first year we actually was negative 10 degrees when we were
real camping. Real quick, those of you who are not from Michigan, seek counsel before you try this activity. Or if you're not from a northern state.
So you had your tent, and then inside your tent, you had some kind of a mat so you didn't have to sleep on the cold, cold ground.
An air mattress, basically, or something like that.
Yeah, air mattresses weren't good because think about what happens to your tires in the middle of winter. They deflate.
Fair enough. So more like
like a foam pad with aluminum to on it to reflect heat. And then we have these down feather sleeping bags that are good down to negative 20 degrees for comfort. Now, it's still really cold, but in the hammock, instead of laying on the cold ground, you're raised up in the air, you got your hammock, you got your really warm sleeping bag, and then you have what's called a cocoon, which basically is another, almost like a sleeping bag type thing that hooks onto either end of the hammock and then zips up. So you're kind of wrapped up like inside a burrito shell. Another sleeping bag around your hammock. So you're protected all sides from the cold, plus you're inside of a sleeping bag inside the hammock. And laying on a cold, frozen ground, even with a pad underneath you, is just not comfortable. Sleeping in a hammock is actually kind of comfortable.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Given your glowing review, I'm sure hopefully people will try this now, or at least show the initiative to do a little more research on that. So with that, what's one thing that you would wish you'd known jumping back into it here, Rob? When you began your career at the auto dealership in sales, outside of thinking that it was a sleazy con man's game, what's one thing you wish you had known, kind of in sales and that kind of thing?
For me, though, that's the biggest thing. I wish I would, because I've done pretty much sales for my whole married life. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing for me was the unknown of how can you, just getting over the stigma, getting over the bad reputation of what a car salesman was. I guess one thing I wish I would have thought of going into or been taught going into it is that selling cars is more about the relationship than anything else. So I wish I had actually kept a contact list of all the people I sold. And then I'd start right off the bat where I would contact these people 2, 3, 4 times a year, right off the bat, because I think I'd have a lot more repeat clientele had I started that from day one. And it's so much easier to going now. I'm trying to decide, when do I go back and start doing that? For how many people, I mean, do I go back to people who I sold 4 or 5 years ago? They'd be like, why is this guy getting hold of me now? Where was I? Why was I not important to him last year or the year before that? Okay. If I started that from day one, then I have a really good clientele where I probably would have sold a lot more cars over the year. I probably would have had a lot more referrals and actually, you know, because when people come in, I'm great to them. I'm wonderful to them. I treat them very well. I treat them with respect. I treat them kindly and honestly. Transparency is actually a really big thing with our dealership. We don't mind showing you any, when you buy a used car, this is how much we have into the car. I mean, you can see we're literally making $1,347 selling the car. And we don't feel that's doing that, because if you look at the other cars, the other 20 cars in the area, we're not the cheapest. We're pretty darn close to the cheapest on this list. Okay. So we don't mind being that transparent with people. So that, I feel like I can get good rapport with the customer when I'm in front of them. But if I had continued that relationship after they left, how many more people would have come back to me to have that same experience again?
Yeah, good question. So what are you doing now for, let's say, the last 3 months, or let's say since you had your summer explosion where things were great?
Yep.
What are you doing to stay in touch with them now to continue on with that relationship?
So one of the things that we're just going through training of saying, hey, this is really important. And now that's why I kind of bring this up. So, boy, I wish I would have known that when I started. I'm building up a contact list in my phone. All of the customers I sold, I'm building up like for the last year first, and then I'm going to try and go back to the previous year at least, and any new cars I sell, I add them to this contact list in my phone. So I can go through my phone every day, pick 5 people, and just text them that day. Hey, hope you're enjoying your 2016 Equinox you bought for me in July. I really appreciate you coming in. Hope things are going well. How are the kids? Did they get to do soccer this year? Just send a friendly note.
That goes a long way. Long way to show that you care, because you don't have to do that. That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a new thing that we're all trying, and I'm trying to buy into it. But like I said, it's harder to get into a habit than to have had that doing that from day one.
Absolutely. So what are some of the best resources then, Rob, that have helped you kind of get to where you are now? It's been 12 and a half years since you initially said, nope, not interested, and then said, okay, let's take a look at it and start it. What are some of the things that have helped you in the last 12 and a half years?
Well, as far as for business goes, they actually have training set up that my company invests into. Not inexpensive. I think it costs them like $8,000 or $10,000 a year to do these trainings, but 3 times a year they come back in and they say, okay, this is what we like to see. This is what seems to work well in the market. This is what seems to work well in your market. These are the way you're doing things. These are the way we can tweak this, maybe do this a little bit better. These are things that we can do to help you sell another 1 to 2 cars a month personally, and as a dealership, so another 10 to 20 cars a month. And they always try to stay with the times. I mean, they even kind of adjusted with the whole COVID thing and how to adjust that. But they're sales techniques. They're just ways to put the customer more at ease. Because one of the things that they say a lot, which I think is a great thing to remember, nobody likes to be sold.
Right.
You know, people love buying things, but nobody likes to be sold.
Yep. I was waiting for you to finish that out because I've heard that before. Nobody likes to be sold, but people love to buy.
Yep.
And if they don't feel like they're being sold, but they're given more and more reasons in order to buy.
Yes. So this whole, for us, the whole training process is surrounded by helping the customer find the car that they think they would like to buy.
Okay.
You know, and there's a series of questions to get them there, a series of inquiries on how to get them there, and everything else. It's less concerned about selling them the car than helping them find the perfect car for themselves.
Okay.
And if you can solve their story problem, if you will, you have a much easier chance of selling a car. And I think it works. I think it works great. When I first started working there, our sales goals was to close 35% of our customers.
Okay.
And now it's raised. We're now supposed to try and sell 45% of our customers.
Okay. Okay.
I'm consistently between 50 and 55%.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Those are huge numbers, man.
It is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. I got one more before we kind of get into the wrap up here. I don't think we covered this here, but what one piece of advice would you give someone who's interested in pursuing a career in your field?
Oh, okay. The biggest thing I can say is to not be fake. You know, and the thing is selling cars is not for everybody. It's not easy. Part of the most challenging part of it is there's a lot of downtime in between. How do you keep yourself motivated to stay with things? How do you keep yourself motivated to contact those customers you sold? How do you make sure you're following up with the car you sold, but you promised them you're going to get them a set of floor mats or a second key for their car or whatever like that. It's the biggest thing about selling cars is, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier, is having a personal relationship.
Sure.
You know, getting to know them, having them get to know you, building a rapport, a trust with that person. So if you're not a good people person, it'll be probably way more difficult for you to get into this industry, this field.
Okay. All right. So that takes me into one of my closing questions. You and I talked about this earlier and you just alluded to it there. The question I would ask is, if you were to step into my shoes, what would you ask yourself that I didn't? And you already alluded to it. What do you do to keep yourself motivated, Rob? I know that was your question and I'm going to just put it back on you because I know that was your question.
No problem. It's actually, that is a real challenge. That's a fight every day. Cause it's so easy in your downtime to find other ways to occupy your time. One of my favorite things is to play solitaire games on my computer. Okay. And sometimes you need those breaks. It's such a mental game. Sometimes you need to take that mental break to kind of refocus and stuff like that. But, things that I do besides that is I make sure I know what the inventory is. I know what we have in stock. I know who I didn't sell last month and why I didn't sell them. And if there's not a good reason why I didn't sell them at the time, I'm trying to get those people back on the phone or at least send them an email or something like that. But yeah, it's a very big mental game. Like when you get to work in the morning, you have to prepare your day. Like, what am I going to do today? What tasks do I need to accomplish? What time frame do I have to complete these tasks? And if you can start your every day off like that, you're bound to have more success. So.
Okay. And I know that in a field like yours, because of our conversations, you can't expect to check out when the clock hits 5, 7, 8 or whatever. If you got somebody there, you follow through until that that opportunity has closed itself.
If I get a customer 30 minutes before close, if I follow it all the way through, sometimes it can take 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
So I can be at work an hour to 2 hours plus after we close the doors to finish up a deal. That is just the nature of the business. And unfortunately, because our normal hours are the same as everybody else, normal working hours, the chances of you staying late do get pretty high. So,
yeah. It sounds like patience and a partner is a worthy attribute as well. So,
correct.
And it sounds like you also do a lot of self-reflection of, you mentioned earlier, if I didn't sell them, why didn't I sell them? What did I do? What didn't I do that might have allowed us to have another buyer, another client, somebody that I could follow up with? And that is, I've been a salesman for a long time as well. Early on in my career, I failed a lot at that. I never took it personally and said, what did I do that could have changed that? I always took it as so-and-so doesn't realize what they're missing. You know what I mean? Because I didn't reflect on my own as where did I fall short? So that's good insight. So Rob, I don't know if you can mention where you work, if that's cool. I don't know if there's approval, disapproval, if you feel comfortable with it, but either way.
I did. I work at Denoyer Chevrolet in Holland, Michigan. So
nice. So how can people connect with you online? Are you on social media? Are you on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram?
I'm on Facebook. I am on Instagram and Twitter. Although I rarely use Instagram, use Twitter occasionally, but I'm definitely more on Facebook than anything else. Rob McAndrews is what I'm under there. I would also encourage you to look up Denoyer Chevrolet used car department. That's kind of our personal used car page. You can definitely see the customers who buy cars there and any specials and stuff we have going on there as well. So
nice. And are you on LinkedIn at all? Because I know that these are going to go on LinkedIn when they're published.
I have a LinkedIn account that I have not logged into in 8 years.
Okay. You might have some missed opportunities there, my friends. But either way, you're on Facebook, Twitter, you know, a little bit of Instagram. But yeah, check out Denoyer. Look up Rob. Wonderful guy. He wouldn't be on here if I didn't think the world of him. So, Rob, last question. What do you feel, and this is a tough one for some people to answer, what do you feel your purpose is on this planet?
Well, I mean, that's not difficult for me to answer at all.
Good. I'm glad.
For me, my primary purpose is to bring the kingdom of heaven here to earth while we're here. By doing so, it's loving other people. It's being a servant to people. It's being someone who's willing to always share their story, someone who's willing to reach out a helping hand when it's necessary. The only second to bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth is to be the best parent I can possibly be and the best spouse I can possibly be. But those are also really close first and seconds there.
Oh, sure. And by doing that, bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth, that's going to allow you and create an environment where you can be a better parent, be a better spouse. So
Absolutely. Awesome.
Rob, I appreciate you being on tonight. That is absolutely awesome. Thanks so much for being on here. Check out Rob, Denoyer Chevrolet in Holland, Michigan. Look him up on socials and we'll post some links here once we get published on this. And just look below and you'll see it there. I appreciate you, Rob. Have an awesome night. All right.
Thanks, Jeff. You too, bud.
All right. Thanks.